session number 10420, reel 46.
Colonel W.I. Watson, reel 46. You were beginning your withdrawal back to Egypt, Colonel.
Yes. We passed Sousse, and we spent 2 days at Sfax, or on the outskirts of Sfax again. And we handed in our carriers and our anti-tank guns on their portees to the 30 Corps vehicle park. Now, there was one of those carriers which had was Bishop Auckland painted on its side. It was named Bishop Auckland. And that carrier was in the Gazala line. And it had come out of the Gazala line through Merzimetru right back to Mariopolis and outside Alexandria and had come the whole way up from Alexandria to Tunisia on Fidaville. And then we had to hand it in. It nearly broke the heart of the carrier platoon when they saw Bishop Auckland being handed into the 30 Corps vehicle park.
Did they get a feeling for their vehicles?
Of course they did. Of course they did, like a man gets an attraction to his horse. And to think that Bishop Auckland had come the whole way, some 2,000 miles or so, and on its own tracks, was a great achievement for the carrier crew. Well, then, as I say, we were there 2 days, and parties went into Sfax, and to see what the town was like, although it was had been very badly damaged. And I know Andrew Clark and I, and Bill Robinson, his second in command, and I think I took Derek Tomlinson, my adjutant, we went to look at the El Jem Colosseum. There's a superb Roman amphitheatre there, Colosseum, just like the Colosseum in Rome. And it stands up all by itself, rather in the flat, deserty part of Tunisia, outside Sfax. Today, anybody can go and see it, and it's well preserved and looked after. But in those days, seemingly, we weren't supposed to go into it. Anyhow, we all went into it, and there we were sitting, looking down at the arena. Derek or somebody, Tomlinson or somebody like that, with our thumbs down to signify the lions should be let in, when the red caps came in and turned us out and told us we'd no business to be there. Well, at Sfax 2, I was told that Mark Leather, who was in then was in the brigade major to a Sudanese brigade in the desert, but he was a friend of my parents and had been a friend of my parents, and I knew him well. I hoped that he would come to me as second in command. Throughout my tour of tenure of command, I was badly let down by my second-in-command. I could never get a good one. And I really thought, well, Mark's coming now. And there was a 95% certainty that he was coming. But when I was at Sfax, the 5% uncertainty surfaced, and I never got him. Instead, I got a man called Harrowing from the Duke of Cornwall's Light Infantry in the place of Dominic Parker. He was a First World War soldier. He'd won the DSO in France, and he had seen 26 years' service. And he was a Yorkshireman, but he was far too old. And really, I was most annoyed. harrying I had to get rid of before we set sail for Sicily. He did some extraordinary, stupid things. He ordered, I know, a full complement of tobacco, which we were allowed, without finding out how many men in the battalion smoked pipes. Well, we had to carry this vast amount of tobacco around simply because he hadn't bothered to find out the pipe smokers. Anyhow, that didn't happen until we were just about to leave for Sicily.
What happened to Parker?
He went to be a company commander and was actually eventually wounded in Sicily. He was quite useless, really, poor chap. He'd been sent out to the Middle East. I don't think you can blame him so much. It's the powers that be. He was sent out to the Middle East as a Russian interpreter. Well, what was a Russian interpreter wanted in the Middle East? And so he was sent to me as second in command, and then was ultimately wounded very shortly after we landed in Sicily. And then we left Sfax, and we set off again eastwards to the desert. We did one journey, I know, on the 23rd, a very tiring journey of 110 miles. We were getting back now, of course, into the desert. And on Easter Monday, we landed up outside Tripoli. Some journeys were so difficult. We had to go to avoid the traffic moving westwards. We had to go right away round through the Mat Marta Hills and Menanin and all that sort of thing. Anyhow, we landed up at on the 27th of April, and we went sightseeing in Tripoli. It was really rather depressing. You never appreciated it was a captured town, and there were no shops and no bright cafes or anything like that, but there was a good NAFE club and there was a good RAF club, but the inhabitants were very glum. And there were Italian policemen, of course, still functioning, and many of the inhabitants used to go out outside the town and watch the streams of Italian prisoners of war traveling back down the road to eventually prisoner of war camps in Egypt to see if they could find out and see if any of their relatives were there. There was the novel sight of fat USA soldiers was all with dark glasses on, and the harbour was full of wrecks. I must say the American soldiers, incidentally, were far from tough guys, as you might have expected. But anyhow, they were there in large numbers. But what was there was the Grand Hotel, which was not open to non-residents. I think the food that was in it was all supplied by NAFE. There was the seafront, which was really quite a pleasant seafront with the hotels on it and rather fine buildings. And the harbour itself was full of wrecks. The only shop that I found open was a shop that sold postage stamps, old postage stamps, so you could buy a set of Libyan postage stamps there or a Sudanese or something like that. But it was interesting going there. The inhabitants had all been told that the British soldier was truly awful, and he was frightfully badly behaved, but he was quite impeccable. He was there, you saw them talking to the small children. Behavior was perfect. And so we spent 2 days there. We were allowed to look around. Because it gets very tiring traveling on over pouring roads. You never know when you're going to get in, what time you were going to get in. And you might get in the dark, or you might get there midday almost.
Did you have a billeting party going on ahead of you to prepare for
No, we had an absolutely perfect drill. When we came to our area, which we were told where we should go by brigade, if we never got there, we could do just the same camp by the roadside or the trackside. We drove into our area, and every company knew exactly where it had to go, with the quartermaster and battalion headquarters in the middle, and where to put their tents up. It was a drill which we brought to perfection. So
something like a Roman marching camp.
Yes.
We
had a company at each corner and the battalion headquarters in the middle, with the quartermaster stores and the ambulances or anything, the soft stuff. But that was the drill. And we did that all the way down. Incidentally, by now, of course, I'd got a staff car. Can't remember now when I got it, but I not only had a staff car, but I had a Jeep as well. And I was doing all the driving. I drove the whole way. I told Parkinson that he'd driven me the 2,000 miles west, and I was going to do the 2,000 miles east. He subsequently got very cross with me on one occasion because I broke a shackle.
You must have had an extremely close relationship with him.
With Parkinson? Oh, yes. I had on my Jeep an ammunition box on the flat mudguard in the front, and in it I kept a bottle of whiskey, which I used to buy from the NAFE. And I used to have a limited amount of water. We used to have, Parkinson kept some jerry cans filled with water. And he used to every night come up to me and say, "Here's your whiskey, sir." As soon as we got settled down for the camp. And of course he's still in the town here. I don't often see him, but I know he's there. Oh, yes, he drove me thousands and thousands of miles. Well, then, by about the 28th of April, we got to Misurata, a 140-mile drive, and there I wasn't going to miss it. I dropped out, let the battalion go on, and I went in with Parkinson, at my driver, to the famous Leptis Magna at Homs. What a wonderful Roman place. Even to a counter there, a stone counter, which you could see the chippings on it where the Romans had measured the cloth or weighed the goods that were being sold. It is quite outstanding. I'm ever so glad I did drop out and go in. And I had a very good Italian guide to show me around. And that was at Homs. The famous Leptis Magna. And then 29th and 30th, we travelled on. We were getting back to Cyrenaica now. We went through the Marble Arch the other way, and there was a notice on it: there must be no defacing this memorial. But I think by now it's all pulled down by Gaddafi. And I remember there again going back to my birds. I saw birds like bee eaters and little hobbies, which are a kind of very small hawk, and pratincoes and turtle doves and the golden orioles, all getting ready to start the migration across the Mediterranean to Europe. Well, now, when we got to on May the 1st, I can't remember quite where we are, just before we got to Benghazi, that was it, the company commanders and the COs were all pulled out. And we were told to go on ahead for a course of instruction at Combined Ops at Cabrit. There we did. We set off. We went to Benghazi the next night, and the 3rd of May, we were went through that superb Jebel area of Cyrenaica in the spring once more. Again, there were the flowers. And that night, I think we spent one night at Benghazi. Then we went to a little bit further on to Derna. Now, Derna is what is known as the jewel of Cyrenaica. It's a lovely little small port on the Mediterranean coast, all whitewashed and palm trees and corn growing outside, and we spent the night there. There was an extremely pleasant camp commandant. I think he was called MacDonald, and he was a Cameron Highlander. But there was a very stupid town major who wouldn't let us park in the square. Wouldn't have any traffic in the square. And we were moved by a red cap and told not to park there. Anyhow, the camp commandant tackled the town major and said, "Now look here, here are three commanding officers and their company commanders who come all the way from Montfrieville, and you start playing on like this." And we were allowed to park, and we spent a very comfortable night in the jewel of Cyrenaica. And
had there been much clearing up of
bushes? Yes, there had been a certain amount of clearing up, yes, yes. When I went down the pass of Saloum, I remember, which I think was the next day, one of the days shortly afterwards, I stopped at the bottom of the pass, Saloum Pass, and got Parkinson to fill up the car with petrol. He wanted filling up the staff car. And while he was doing it, I walked across 100 yards of the desert, and there were two graves. And they were both German crosses, and one was the grave of the Honourable John Bowes Lahn, the Master of Arms, and the other was a sergeant in the Scots Guards. Now, in my childhood, I had known John as a small boy at Streatham Castle out here, just outside the town here where we are. And I, whenever I could, took the opportunity of not getting involved in playing with him. I had other friends, and I used to take avoiding action in Streatham Park. If I saw John coming along, I'd hide behind the tree. You know, it was very affected me very much when I suddenly saw, well, I can't avoid John this time. This was his grave at the bottom of the pass of Saloum. When the battalion came following along and got to the brook, it was entrained there and went by train the rest of the way to Alexandria. It was really strange, you know, on the beginning of May, traveling through the whole area where you'd fought over. It was all quiet now. I know that on one occasion, I can't remember quite where, we stopped, and there were a vast number of derelict tanks that had all been collected into an area by the roadside. And I saw a chap wandering around looking through them, and I said, "What on earth are you doing?" And he said, "We're all volunteers, and I'm looking for a dead man that's reported in one of these tanks. So we take him away and bury him." And they were just beginning then build the Alamein Cemetery. And they were bringing the bodies in from all over the whole of the desert, from Alamein, right westwards, just short of Tobruk, bringing them all in to the famous Alamein Cemetery. We eventually got to Alexandria, where we were allowed, I can't remember quite how many days, about 3 or 4 days leave in Alexandria. And Andrew Clark and I did, in fact, as I've already mentioned, walk into Crasher Nichols in one of the clubs there, and we had this talk, which I've already recorded, with him. And I remember Andrew Clark being very antagonistic with our new brigadier, towards our new brigadier, Ronnie Senior, because he was always trying to shove down our throats his regiment, Queen's West Surrey Regiment, which annoyed Andrew Clark very much indeed. In fact, I don't think Andrew Clark ever really got on with our brigadier. Likewise, I didn't, because we really were pretty experienced COs by now, and here was an upstart from another part of the army, you might say.
Was he a regular soldier?
No, he wasn't. He was a territorial, but he was... he was at least 2 years older than me. He was very rich. He was chairman of Cunard or like that. He had horses, and he joined the Territorials in 1924, the Surreys, Queen Surreys. He come from the First Army. I'm not sure that he hadn't come up with the 56th Division, the Black Cat Division. Anyhow, after our 4 days leave in Alexandria, we then went down to Cabrit for this course, which was to last from the 10th to the 15th. Meanwhile, the battalion was coming down by itself. And now, Cabrit, or HMS Saunders as it was known, was a pilot station on the Suez Canal on the Great Bitter Lake. The canal, as you know, flows through the Great Bitter Lake and then goes on to Suez. And this was known as HMS Saunders, where you all learnt how to do combined ops. Now, we went down there with the company commanders and started the course on the 10th of May, and it was to last the 15th. And the whole principle of combined operations is cooperation with the Army and the Navy, and it must be good. It's no good thinking you can get away with half measures. You can't. You've got to have the highest cooperation between the two services. And that was quite clear as soon as we arrived at Cabrit. And, of course, it wasn't very easy as a for any of my chaps or any of the brigade to suddenly be thrown in to a Royal Naval Station when you heard orders, away LCAs, man your boats, and you talked about going down onto the Hard after you'd been sweating away in the Western Desert for a year or so. But that's what happened. But you had to get used to it, and you had to make sure you did know. Well, we started this course, and you'd hardly believe it, but on the 13th of May, 3 days later, a message came in to, while we were in the middle of the lecture, the Corps commander wanted to see us three COs. And so we were pulled out by Oliver Lees.
This is Andrew Clark.
What?
The three COs are yourself, Andrew Clark, and who was the third?
Bob Lidwell, who was commanding then the 8th Battalion, and myself. And he admitted that it was a fast one, would we go to the 2-3-1 brigade, which comprised the 1st Devons, 1st Hampshires, and 1st Dorsets, as he was not at all satisfied with the state of their training, and they'd only come from India and to Malta, and they had no knowledge of getting through a minefield or getting through barbed wire, and as I say, he admitted it was a fast one. So on the 14th, instead of going to our course, we went and watched the training. I went to the 1st Dorset, and I was asked to talk to them, and I was asked to give a talk and watch their training. The CO was a chap from the last war, First World War, and I apologized. I said, well, I do apologize having been told to come and talk to you. Yeah, I'm only a territorial and a very young CO at that. But they were frightfully pleased. And I said, I'll try and answer any questions. And I did. I answered as many questions as I could. But there was one question that I always remember I was asked. Did you get any bread beyond Benghazi? I couldn't remember whether we did get bread beyond Benghazi. Anyhow, so far as our course at Cabrit was concerned, it was some a write-off, because I had to go, we all had to go to the three COs, had to go and talk to the 2-3-1 brigade. Then after the course was over, I went for a few days' leave. We were all given a few days' leave.